Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hello, and welcome to a special episode of the Batteries Included podcast. I'm Dominic Chione, and my co-host today is Tom Logney, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We are joined today by special guests, William Reed, chairman and CEO of Rove Charging, and Jeff Toon, co-founder and VP of e-mobility and charging infrastructure, also at Rove. Thank you very much for joining us, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've asked you here today because you guys have built an amazing charging hub down in Santa Ana, California, that really sets a high standard for these larger charging installations, and we're looking forward to learning all about it. But maybe first we could start off by hearing more about your backgrounds and how your prior experiences led you to Rove. So actually, maybe we could start with Jeff on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been in the renewable energy infrastructure for probably about 15 years. Started in solar, been in energy storage, and then got into EV charging. Worked for and with SolarCity, Tesla, ABM, really a lot of infrastructure. So my experience is really ducts and structures, construction, building these from the ground up. Really built all my projects west of the Mississippi, concentrating on California, because that's really truly where the market was. But in the early days, working for Tesla and building Tesla sites is corridor charging. So in, you know, between cities in the middle of nowhere. So wealth of experience, understanding kind of dense urban areas and corridor charging. And that's kind of my experience over the years.
Wow, that's pretty, that's cool. That's interesting. And how did you come to start, found Rove?
Well, it was very interesting because basically we were looking at the industry, and since I worked for Tesla, I was building infrastructure, driving EVs, and the infrastructure was just not in place from the amenity side. So really what we had was a conversation of how could we make charging better for the everyday driver? And really our focus was not on the corridor charging. We really wanted to go into dense urban areas, understanding that you're going to have charging needs from people that are in apartments, people that don't have enough load from your house, and really wanted to give an experience factor related to something they're already used to. It's just a regular filling station. And so we really just looked at that and said, hey, we can build something that's better than the existing infrastructure from both fueling and electrons, and then just give the opportunity for the customer experience that I think was needed in the industry.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for that. So, Bill?
So, I've been involved in energy infrastructure for over 15 years as an investor and as a manager, and participated in building power plants and peaking plants and repowering old facilities, et cetera, working on hydrogen projects, everything in the renewable space you can imagine. And came together with this team because the key to this business is being able to get the power to the site and managing it when it's there. So, you know, we were very lucky to have Jeff with all the experience he has in construction and designing these types of facilities for Tesla. And I brought my skill in trying to manage an enterprise, raise money for it, help set strategy, et cetera. And in my background, I was involved with a NASCAR race team, Richard Childress Racing. I worked on years past the IPO of Ducati Motorcycles, was involved in managing Carry Limousine. So anything with wheels was something, since I was a little boy, I was very interested in.
Right on. All right. So this, I guess we should talk about this site. I mean, this is the first of many or several. We'll get into that. But yeah, what's tell us about this initial Santa Ana charge hub. How many stalls? What kind of amenities does it have?
So it's on 1.3 acres in Santa Ana. Santa Ana is a terrific EV community. They've been very supportive of us coming there and building the center. We have 40 chargers, 28 Tesla superchargers, V4 superchargers, and 12 Terra 184s from ABB. We also have CHAdeMO and CCS plugs. On the site is a building that has a lounge and clean restrooms, has a recharge market from Gelson's. Gelson's is a local grocer who offers very high quality product, very enthusiastic about the EV community, been a great partner of ours. So you have a place where you can pick up a drink or a snack. You can take advantage of free Wi-Fi in the lounge, use the restroom. We also have a car wash, a touchless car wash, and other amenities like there's always shade, there's always a security person there. There's charging support, so if there's any issue with the chargers or needing directions in any way, there's somebody there who can help you. And we think that total customer experience is very, very important. And I think most importantly, we're really in ground zero for EV enthusiasm, as you know. Southern California is a terrific, terrific place to be if you want to build an EV business.
And to add to Bill's point, is like what we looked at during the initial conversations is, you know, safety, security, lighting, a convenient place to go to the restroom. You know, you really need to feel like if you look at the existing industry, it was in the back of a parking lot. It was dark. It still is like that today. And, you know, I understand that people like our infrastructure is going to be looking at charging stations like ours to replicate. But I think at the end of the day, it's just, what amenities do you offer EV enthusiasts to be able to come to your station to feel safe and secure?
Well, this sounds really great from like an EV driver's perspective. Like I know Tom and I both have, you know, road tripped like a lot of miles and yeah, the infrastructure out there, you can end up in behind, like you say, behind like a national retail chain in the middle of the night. And it's you know, it's just not that secure feeling. So having people on staff, like on site 24 hours, like to control access to the buildings and just to help people out actually too. This is one of their roles is to help people out, new drivers with their cars, if there's any charging issues, which, you know, a lot of us kind of end up doing anyway, when we show up at charging stations, sometimes people are often in need of help.
Let me, in that vein real quick, is there signage that says like, if you need help, you know, ask an attendant inside? Because what I've noticed when I'm at a DC fast charger, for instance, and somebody pulls up and they're new and they really don't know what to do, they're very confused. Like you see them looking around like, you know, they don't know where to turn. I think it would be helpful if there was like a little sign that said, if you need some help, go inside. There's an attendant there that will help you do this. Do you offer any? Because otherwise they might not know there's someone there to help them.
It's a great point, Tom. The attendant's job is to stand outside by the chargers, and when someone comes up, particularly if they're not entirely sure how the charger works or how to make it work, is to approach them and offer to help. That's their job. You don't have to go inside to get help. At night, we have a security person on staff. We lock the lounge at night, but he'll let you in so you know it's safe. Everything's well lit. But their job, the charging support staff's job, is to be visible and easily accessible.
And I think you can see when somebody's confused, it's very easy for our staff to see within a couple seconds that they don't, you know, they need some assistance. So I think this is what also sets us apart, that we get customer feedback, and also we have the opportunity to train, assist, help our drivers.
So this initial location has been open for maybe a couple months now or something?
October 16th was our opening date. 2 months.
Okay. Have you guys thought of additional things in that time that you may add or take away from future installs?
Well, Jeff and I have talked about this a lot. We're getting data about when people come, right, how much they charge, how long they're there, do they go in the market, do they get the car? So we're learning a lot, and there's things we know we can do more intelligently. But I think, by and large, we got it right. And almost from day one, over 500 EV drivers would show up every day. We've, I think, charged close to 30,000 EVs so far in 2 months. It's, people must like the product. We must have gotten a lot of it right. Are there things we can improve? We're open to feedback, and we know there are things we can do better in building, et cetera, et cetera. But by and large, it's a customer-friendly, very easy, tap and pay, if you want, type experience.
Do you have an app?
We do, but you don't need to use it to charge. You use it just to make life easier. But if you're driving a Tesla, obviously it's plug and charge. That's pretty simple. If you're driving a non-Tesla, you can just go tap and pay. It's Apple Pay or any of the other payment services with your credit card. And same thing, plug in and away you go.
We'd love you to be in our app, but at the end of the day, it just needs to have access for everyone. And so that was one of our critical values when we were discussing this in the beginning. How do we open this up to everyone and they don't feel they have to download another app? Hey, bring your credit card, tap and pay, you're ready to go.
Yeah, well, I meant more of, not necessarily for the payment, but even though you've got a huge site, which looks fantastic, I hope to get there at some point soon. I use my app more than any reason to see charger availability. And I know your site is huge, but that no matter how big you make it, I think eventually we're going to get to a point where even your site will be full. And it's kind of nice to see ahead of time if there's seven of the bays are open, or two of the bays are open, or 20 of the bays are open ahead of time. That's what I meant. Is it possible to view that through the app? Like if I'm 20 minutes out and I'm driving there, I can see how busy the facility is?
You can see that in our app. And we're also, you can see it through most of the map, in-car map services, Google and Apple Maps. We've provided that information and it's getting picked up so that you'll be able to just look and see, oh, there's 40 chargers. How many are available now? I'll go there. But just so you know, we've had almost no queuing. And what queuing we've had, I guess on Sunday, we had a SoCal EV Club meet there. They were collecting Christmas presents for disadvantaged kids. It was terrific. We had a little queue for just a couple of minutes, but when you have 40 chargers, they turn over very quickly. So availability, ease of use, as Jeff talked, but availability, I can get there, it's right off the five, and I know there's going to be a charger available for me. If I have to wait a minute or two, I'm not too troubled by that.
So among the list of amenities at the site, you have a vacuum and air inflation, tire inflation things, but they're on free vend, I understand. Is that on purpose? And maybe I'm just curious what the strategy behind that little, because I think you'd want to pull in every revenue stream you could possibly get, right?
So we thought it was important for the community that you should be able to put air in your tires, squeegee the front of your windshield, and vacuum your car. And that was one of my huge frustrations in driving an EV, is I'd go to a site and there's nothing, there's not only no bathroom, but there's nothing else there. So we think it's a free amenity, just like free Wi-Fi, and we just want to build customer loyalty.
Right on.
That's great. Well, along the lines, Dom's pointed out about revenue streams. One of the things that it's been very difficult, and I know EV adoption is on the rise now, particularly where you guys are. I mean, that would be where you'd want to start for sure, because there's so many EVs. But it's always been difficult for charging sites to be profitable. You know, the extraordinary upfront expense of the equipment, the installation, interconnect, all that stuff. Is the amenities that you're going to have on site, like how big of a role does that play in, you know, getting above water as far as the site not losing money? I was early on, but I had chargers on a commercial property in New Jersey, and I don't want to add up how much money I lost over 10 years. You know, it's, you know, and I had a lot of the equipment donated to me by the companies to get their name out there, but easily I lost $20,000 to $30,000 just maintaining
Wow.
a couple chargers over 10 years. How do you make money today with EV charging?
So our primary focus is selling electricity to EV drivers. And you're right, the site is expensive, but the key for us is how many people show up. So we make money on every charge. When you have 500 charges a day, you're making money. We're nicely profitable. We also make money on the car wash, and we our tenant Recharge by Gelson's pays us rent for the use of the market. And we were profitable in the first month.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. So so this is huge. Like Tom was saying, it's hugely capital intensive to start something like this, right? So already cash positive. How long ahead do you project your initial return on investment? Unless that's too deep into a secret sauce.
It's not so much that it's a secret sauce, but we're all guessing, right? Very expensive. We're going to get much smarter going forward. We have 10 in the pipeline. Hope to start the second site in Costa Mesa in the next 30 to 45 days. I don't know, Torrance or Corona or Long Beach will be shortly behind that. It looks like the returns at this level of utilization, the returns are very good.
Okay. And you said you have 10 already in the plans. You mentioned earlier that you, and maybe I misheard it, you're going to focus on urban areas instead of corridors. Is that going to be long-term strategy or just initial strategy to get the company rolling? Or are you going to say, you know what, the other companies, you know, let IANA and Electrify America have the corridors. We're going to concentrate in urban areas and serve people that are underserved, which you're 100% right. The people that live in apartments and multifamily dwellings that can't charge at home are dramatically underserved today. I get emails every week from followers saying, Tom, I live in an apartment building. I live in a condo. I live here. I live there. I can't charge at home. How do I do this? So, you know, I mean, if you were to say, oh, yeah, that's what we're going to focus on, I wouldn't look at it as a negative. But is that going to be your strategy?
So our initial strategy was to focus on Southern California and only Southern California. When we looked at the amount of EVs and how many DC fast chargers were available for those EVs, we think there's at least room for 50 sites like Rove, if not more. Once we get the benefit of having a small corporate staff really focused on one area, we'll look at other parts of the country. Probably Northern California would be next, but that may be 2 or 3 years away. But we think in order to provide a great service to our local customers, we have to have at least 10 up and running in Southern California. And then you know whether you're on the 5 or wherever you're going, you're not too far away from a Rove center.
Okay, so it does sound like you're going to be in California for a while. Yes. So, you know, for our followers that don't live in California, you can just watch and, be a little jealous for a little while as these sites proliferate around California. And then hopefully once they've saturated that market, Rove will consider servicing EV drivers outside of California.
Yeah, and there just aren't enough plugs for all the EV drivers out there. So anybody in our business, whether it's IONA or anyone who's installing chargers, we think is good for our business overall and encourages people to buy an EV, which is a very cool product. Anyone who has not driven one, drive one, you'll be sold. There, it's a terrific, terrific product.
All right. So I'm going to talk about some of the technical details of the site itself. So you have a very nicely sized solar canopy over the charging bays, and it's really cool to hear, Jeff, your past history in that area. So how much energy might that collect in a day, and will that solar component, will that pay for itself over time?
Solar does pay for itself over time. You know, there's always return on your investment when installing solar, especially in California. The size of our system, you know, currently the canopy is 220 kilowatts, but at the end of the day, the important part is the shade that it produces. And so, yes, it's a investment on infrastructure. It does incorporate value in that manner. But there's not enough energy to power one charger on that site. And so really, you know, it would take acres and acres of land and lots of solar to be able to power a facility. So we put as much solar as we can on a facility. And really, the byproduct is shade that I think that's more important to the customer experience than it is kind of our organization.
So that would be like a couple dozen cars worth a day, basically. Interesting. So you also have a battery storage component, I guess, as well. I understand there's like, it's kind of huge. It feels like it's overbuilt, and I wanted to get into this a little bit. So I heard there's like, 6 megawatt hours of LFP batteries on site. And so I imagine this is to help avoid demand charges, like when, you know, a lot of people plug in and, you'll need to pull a lot of power from the grid. And so, you know, grid operators charge a lot more for when that happens. So I imagine that's what the batteries is for, to keep that, act as a buffer so you don't get those demand charges. But it still seems like a lot of storage. So like, why is it so large? Do you use it like for peak shaving?
Well, we want to always make sure we have power available for cars. So when we're busiest, which is generally after noon on any given day, we want to make sure that whatever happens, we can charge people's cars. It does help us manage our load, and we can afford to charge the batteries at lower costs earlier in the day. So that helps. But the primary focus is to take stress off the grid and make sure we always have power available.
Cool.
Do you see a situation where you might sell some of that stored energy back to the grid for additional revenue?
No, we don't. We sell it at higher prices to our customers.
That makes sense, right? So I was thinking, so that there's no room for like a grid conditioning sort of services as well, right? You can't. I'm not sure if that's a big enough sort of battery to offer those kind of services or not, but maybe you could tell me.
You know, the way we're thinking about it is we like to keep things as simple as possible. And when you're looking at ancillary services that you're going to participate in the utility offerings, that makes the site more complex. And so if you want to scale, you really need to focus on what's going to be in your core strategy and optimizing for the utility from a site perspective, the load, the peak draw. That's what we're focusing on.
Okay. So on this site, about half of the stalls are Tesla superchargers, and a Tesla handles the sets their own pricing, I guess, and handles all their own billing internally. So, but with so many other manufacturers now being on the in the supercharger, you know, ecosystem, is it? I'm just wondering if it's going to be detrimental to the business if someone pulls up in their Chevy Equinox and charges at the Tesla supercharger rather than at the slightly more expensive, you know, one of the Rove bays.
So right now, the Tesla chargers are on the Tesla system, which we think is terrific, and they do set pricing. You're right about that. There's so much change now between the CCS and NACS. We have to provide CCS. In the long run, we wish there was one provider of chargers that worked for everybody, but you tell me, that could be 3 or 5 years away from now. So we just want to make sure that whatever you're driving, there's a charger there for you.
Okay.
One of the things I noticed, I don't think there's any pull-through bays at your initial location. Is that something you're considering at future sites?
We looked at it very carefully. It's we didn't think there would be much usage in Santa Ana, which is pretty urban. But in other sites we have, we're looking at it. So it'll depend on the market. Jeff, anything you want to add?
Yeah, it's also, you know, there's a lot of space required for pull-through stalls, and so it really depends on the size and location. So one of the items that we have to do during our due diligence phase is see the size of the property, really investigate the layout. It's really important to get kind of the parking flow correct, and sometimes it is challenging in these dense urban areas that we're trying to fit a large amount of parking in a small area. So our larger sites, yes, definitely looking and considering those.
Yeah, you do need a lot of room for them because you can't just consider the vehicle. You have to assume that it might be coming in with a trailer for a pull through, and it eats up a lot of real estate. But that is something that with now there's how many electric trucks available, you know, a lot of people need that. But like you said, that is site dependent, depending on where it is and where you're located. And some of the urban areas might have a less of a need than you know, some of the through fares. So that's understandable.
We have larger sites where we think it may work very, very well. And we've been experimenting. We actually were doing a little testing on the site last week with some large trucks and things. And it's very much front of mind. We'll just have to see, depending on the site and the location.
And really, if you look at our Santa Ana property, we really wanted to focus on customer experience. So even our parking stalls are larger, they're wider, trying to understand, hey, this is our first project. Let's see how customers, the flow. Let's bring in some larger medium duty fleet applications. Let's look at some of these dynamics so then we can take what we've designed and then learn from it. So there's a lot of learning that we're doing on our Santa Ana property to optimize future locations.
I'm loving this. I think I'm just about out of questions over here, but is there anything that you, I don't know, you're laughing at me, Tom, you got some? Okay. So is there anything that, that we've left out that you feel you'd like to get across to our audience?
The one thing we haven't really talked about is that we've been very focused on developing the community around each site. So we sponsor car club get-togethers. We do local charity events. We had the Santa Ana High School Marching Band on our site a couple of weeks ago. We want people to feel very comfortable and feel that it is their place, not somebody else's place. It's not an afterthought. The place was purpose-built for our drivers, EV drivers, and we want them to feel very much at home, and we want to be part of that community.
Right. Yeah, it's really, you can really tell that the place is like put together and by people who actually drive EVs, and a lot of times in the past, a lot of people involved in the industry, different, you know, various aspects of it, you know, drove combustion cars, and, you know, which is fine, but you don't really get the insight into the needs and the whole experience, you know, unless you're actually driving an EV yourself. So,
Part of the advantage of coming in, let's say, if you want to call this late, I know it's still early in the EV adoption, but to some of the old timers, you know, that have been using public infrastructure for a decade plus, it's late, you know what I mean? But I think part of that, and I spoke to this when I went and visited the IANA site in Apex, North Carolina last week, part of their advantage was that you get to see what worked and what didn't work from some of these other networks. You know, you could hopefully learn from their mistakes and say, you know, all of this investment that was done years ago by people that didn't drive EVs, that never experienced it, you know, they missed on a lot of points, but hopefully you've picked up on that. You've been driving EVs, you've experienced it, and you'd say, you know, half of what these guys have done is wrong. So part of the question with that is equipment-wise, you know, we've seen a lot of problems with some of the public charging equipment out there. Now, of course, the sites out there aren't managed by employees on site to see that there's a problem and they can report it quickly. So we've seen sites being broken for months at a time and no action on that. What made you choose the particular brand? So let's say the ABB Terrace, there's a lot of equipment out there. And, you know, what's going to be your policy as far as broken equipment? Like, you want it fixed within a day, you want to, you know, immediately. Talk a little bit about maintaining your equipment and why did you choose the particular equipment you chose when there's, you know, as well we know, a lot of choices out there today.
Really what we went to was decisions we made a couple of years ago. So I think you're balancing your question a couple of different ways. Is we were part of the older infrastructure that we had to make selections during, you know, COVID and conversations during supply chain issues. And really new chargers, we've seen a plethora of options come out to the industry today. And I'm very excited about all the technology, the higher power chargers, the customer experience. But we chose ABB for the reliability factor. Some of the people that were that we discussed as a down selection list, you know, they're no longer here. And so we made the right opportunity or the right decisions moving with ABB. The other part of it is being somebody new in the industry, you're not that customer that the bigger names really want to go after. So really, it was very important to us that we built these relationships, and ABB saw our vision early on in the process, and they were a dedicated vendor to helping us along through, in my opinion, you had to be a very flexible charge point operator. We had to go through turbulent time with supply chain issues. We had to go through NTEP and CTEP, and I'm glad to say we have the only CTEP compliant 350s, high power 350s in California. So a lot of things we focused on from a regulation standpoint, from optimization, reliability, and we hope to grow with ABB. I think they have a wonderful product. We love and are very interested in their new A400, and we're going to always assess what's going to be the best product in the market, because it's great to see all new technology that's coming out today.
And we make sure that because we have charging support, I say over 90% of the problems that occur, with the aid of somebody standing there, you can cure the problem. If the charger needs to be reset, or there's some other issue, or you have to put the plug replug it, most of those problems are fairly minor and can be quickly fixed. When you have 40 chargers, you can afford to take one down. We have 4-hour response maintenance that comes and have everything back online as fast as possible. And everything's networked, so our operations team can see instantly if there's a charger that's having a problem, and we can try to repair it. We've learned this, right? We've learned this from being users ourselves, and we want to make sure that the charger works the first time, and that if it goes down, we fix it quickly. And our experience so far has been very, very good.
And I think one of our advantages are we have one site, and we can focus on one site rather than having this massive rollout that you have 1,000 chargers out there, and all of a sudden you realize you got something wrong. And really, we have a low technology solution. We check the chargers in the morning. We check the chargers in the afternoon. We check the chargers in the evening. And low technology solutions, because of our customer service focus, is, I think, sets us apart.
Nice. Just really quickly on just you mentioned your partners there. So is Tesla like an official partner? Will they'll be participating in the other locations as well?
Tesla will be participating in all our locations, yes.
All right. Is that easy to arrange? I feel like they might be relatively eager to, you know, join into an effort like this. Maybe not, I don't know.
Well, let me answer that for them. Nothing with Tesla's easy.
No comment.
They can't say that, Tom, but I'll say it.
But it's really great that... Okay. They bring a lot to the site, right? So it's really nice it happen.
And we're very happy with our Tesla relationship.
Yeah, good answer. Right. So I have one more question about pricing, because I know we're getting up against the timing now.
Yeah.
Is there any thought to charging extra beyond 80% state of charge? It gets maddening for some EV drivers. Now, I know you've got a lot of chargers on your site, so you talked earlier about not having queuing issues. I still think eventually you will, no matter how many build, especially once the word gets out and I know the word's out now, but once more and more people know where you are and that it's such a good charging experience, people are going to gravitate towards your place. There are some EVs take longer to charge from 80% to 100% than they do from 0 to 80%. And sometimes it's maddening when I pull up to a DC fast charger and there's nobody in sight, the guy left and is at 91% state of charge and it's pulling like 12 kilowatt. You know what I mean? And I know it's going to be another 40 minutes before they leave. So have you guys thought about how do you get them to understand it? Really, it's not to your benefit to stay beyond 80 or 85%. Is there a financial thing that you can do to say, look, get you off? Is it signage, or do you guys are you going to take the approach? Listen, they can stay there as long as they want, as long as their car's still charging.
So I think currently we're going to take the approaches. As you're there, you're going to be able to charge until 100%. Now, as the utilization changes, we may consider some different options. We're going to have to see what the ecosystem is going to be out there. We're going to have to understand our customers. We always want to be customer experience, whether you're waiting in line or charging. We got to balance that from a perspective of experience. But I think what our solution is going to be is build as many as the many charging stations as we can. So hopefully the utilization on one site it can be lessened and they go to the next site. So I really think you're going to see a lot of players in the market offering solutions. Rove's going to be one of them. And we hope to bring that best-in-class service, one from a perspective that, hey, we have a charger down the street. We have another one a couple miles away. And you have the option to pick a station that actually you'll be able to charge on.
Wow. Well, this has been an amazing, and it sounds like it's, yeah, it's just a really great concept for a charge hub. And it's I'm really happy to hear that it's gone so well over this initial couple months and revenue positive. That's just kind of amazes me. So this is because it takes a while for you to build up a business like this. Like, for instance, when was Rove initially founded?
March 2020.
So
it's been 4 years, over 4 years.
4 years, become an overnight success. That's not bad. That's not bad. In the music business is like 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
All right. So where can people keep track and keep up to speed with what's going on at Rove?
We have a website, rovecharging.com, and happy to talk to anyone who wants to hear our story at any time. Trying to have a lot of media outreach and direct mailing, et cetera. So trying to make sure people know who we are and where we are.
All right. Well, so I guess that brings us to the end of our show. Thank you for spending this time with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a happy holiday.
Same to you guys. So if you guys out there in the audience have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much again, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks, ciao. Guys.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.